So the decision to take off, as these pilots did, ODARC 30 in the morning, was certainly doable. But there certainly were some advantages to delaying the decision and maybe not going at that early hour. John, what are your thoughts on maybe a different scheme of things?
Well, I agree, Bob, that it was a reasonable decision to depart from this airport, given all the circumstances. But I would not have done it in the manner that they would have done. I would have waited a little longer. And if that 9 o'clock meeting had to be delayed a little bit, I'd delay it. There's a bunch of things that are starting to line up here against us. There's the early morning. We've had no breakfast. And it's dark. And dark is a huge thing at an airport like this, where there's no navigational guidance. There's no obstacle departure procedure. You're really relying a lot on your eyeballs. So I would want daylight. I'd also want to have something in my stomach, because not only are we taking off with this, we got an hour and a half flight. We're not going to get to eat till 9 o'clock. And now who knows what's going to happen on the other end? We got to make an approach in Denver, Virginia there. And we haven't had anything but a cup of coffee at 4 o'clock in the morning. So for a whole bunch of reasons, there's enough red flags here that I would go, but I would take my time, slow it down a little bit, and delay at least an hour and a half.
Okay. You know, one of the things that leaps out at us in this scenario is screwing up an ATC clearance. On one hand, we could say that's inexcusable. Nobody screws up an ATC clearance. But then let's look in a mirror at, you know, missing a word or abbreviation here or just catching it on the fly. There are problems associated with the ATC clearance. So let's look at some of the ways we can cover that reality. There were two pilots here. I mean, that in itself should have prevented a problem with the ATC clearance. Wally, what are some of the tools that you've used over time?
Well, in this case, they picked up their ATC clearance by telephone, so it's a pretty sure bet that only one of the pilots heard it. Apparently, he read it back properly, but it also seems apparent that when he communicated that to the other pilot, there was a breakdown in communication. At the airline, our procedure there was that when one pilot was ready to get the clearance, he had to make sure that the other pilot was available to listen so that they both heard the clearance and heard the readback, and so you had a backup situation there. Now, how could you do that? You know, if you're going to get the clearance by phone, most of us nowadays have speaker phones. So if there's two of us flying the plane, there's really no reason we can't both listen to that clearance. In this case, it's very well one of those links that could have eliminated this accident.
Well, another opportunity would have presented itself had they delayed departure. It would have been more likely they would have run into somebody at the airport, another pilot or a local instructor, who they might have been able to ask, this is a VFR airport, what are generally the clearances given, and what's going to happen here when we ask for our clearance? And that would have given them some idea of what to expect in the clearance. Obviously, they misunderstood the clearance, either one or both of them, assuming that they communicated among themselves. We don't know whether the clearance was actually written down. Mm-hmm. So,
good point.
There's a lot of issues here between the two pilots in terms of communication and understanding of what the clearance was going to be. But if you're more likely to have the opportunity to say, hey, I'm departing IFR out of here, going to West Virginia, what do they typically give you?
Yeah.
And you might have the opportunity to glean some information from the locals. It's a VFR airport. As John said, there's no obstacle departure procedure. You really need to be doing your homework as to what kind of obstacles are around the airport. Now, we're talking about mountains in this case, but it could be towers. I know of VFR airports which have huge obstacles next to them. And if you're not aware of them and totally disregard the opportunity to find out what's around you, you could wind up impaled on a mountain or against a tower or a building. So a little bit of work is necessary there. I think they rushed this departure totally. It appears that taking some time would have given them an opportunity to pull their stuff together in a more coherent manner, because obviously they hadn't done that.
There are countless CRM issues here, the cockpit resource management issues, you know, preventive, that are just the kind of tools we need to eliminate this. And Bob, you brought up a very good one, familiarization, you know, with the airport you're departing from. And you look at this two ways. I mean, if these pilots had never been into North Adams before, okay, all the more reason why you do your homework and absolutely familiarize yourself with it. And God forbid you had been in there before and knew what you were doing, and then you get into the complacency issue where, okay, I've been here before, ho-hum, no big deal. But everybody that was cleared out of their IFR was told to climb to 5,000 feet. And that certainly conflicts with 2,200 feet. Who's ever been cleared at 2,200 feet?
Which is an oddball altitude on top of it.
That's
doesn't seem to be right.
That's a reality check.
Yes.
Something's
not right here.
Something's not right here.
And we need to be attuned to those cues. If something doesn't sound right, and Wally, get back to your point of having a backup. You know, any person, when you write it down, you just kind of, you know, you're a robot. You write it down. But when you read it to somebody else, wait a minute, they told you to level off at what altitude? And wait a minute, there's mountains out there. And that would have almost automatically led to a discussion.
Sure.
So the instant feedback that you're going to get by just, you know, having dialogue with the issue would certainly have helped a great deal. John, you raised a very, very good point. In the actual aircraft accident scenario, there was a non-standard radio call on the departure that, boy, could have just prevented this whole accident, couldn't it?
Sure. When they made initial contact with Albany, they stated, yeah, we're off North Adams, with no mention of the altitude that they were currently at or the altitude that they were assigned. If they had said, we're off North Adams out of 1,000 climbing 2,200, which is recommended in standard phraseology for this, Albany Approach would have caught it right away. And that double check was lost right there.
A lot of time went by before that even came up.
Well, then they came back and asked for higher.
Yeah.
Then they came back and said, well, we're at 2,200. And Albany finally said, no, you should be at 5,000. And by that point, it was all over.
So incredible. Just the use of standard phraseology
could have.
We talk about that often, but just that could have
that
caused,
double check
could have prevented this accident.
And the flow is so important. It's just a casual comment and just professionalism, you know, doing it the right way every time. Because at most airports, not a big deal. In a non-radar environment with mountains around, it was a huge deal. In this case here, you know,
You're on your own out there.
Yep. Exactly.
Think a little bit about the pressure on these pilots, though. You know, here they are. It's going to be a short night. They want to get as much sleep as they can. So in an effort to do that, they say, what's the latest we can get to the airport and still make our meeting and get our job done? So, Bob, you know, let's get up in the morning and you run out and do the pre-flight and I'll call flight service and get the clearance. You have the engines running and we'll be out of here. We can get an extra 15 minutes of sleep. So there's those pressures, and it's easy for all of us to say after the fact, now let's delay an hour. That would have been a good idea, but that's reality. We want to make our meeting. We want to make our 135 connection in the case of the King Air. So there's a lot of pressure there, and we need to recognize that. We have to slow down a little bit. We can't let this pressure change our standards.
Well, you and I have both operated in crew aircraft, and in the case of this accident and the scenario we looked at, boy, having two pilots is a tremendous benefit. I mean, single pilot, you know, is a lot of work. But with two pilots, use those resources, allocate it, and use that as a backup. I mean, it allows you to back up every single thing you do. And in this case here, there should have been a takeoff briefing. They should have, at some point, even if one was ordering fuel and one was doing this, at some point, okay, now we're together, either in the airplane or in the FBO, let's prepare for our departure. And how could we have done that to eliminate the accident? Takeoff brief, how would that have?
Well, obviously, the first thing you should have been looking at the terrain and deciding how we're going to plan our departure because we don't have an ODP. And even if they hadn't done that, they still should have discussed what they would have done if had there been a problem, had there been an engine out, what their return to the airport plan was going to be. And that alone would have revealed that you can't climb straight ahead to 2,200 feet at this airport. They would have had to circle one way or the other to come back. All of those things would have raised
the terrain awareness that
they just didn't have.
Right. We should maybe talk a little bit about technology. This accident happened some years ago. Things have changed in terms of the available technology in the aircraft. Obviously, Garmin 1000 equipped aircrafts have terrain capability. Garmin 530, 430Ws have terrain, and many of the handhelds have terrain available in their databases. Something that in a case like this, you definitely want to utilize. That's what it's for, telling you where you are relative to terrain. That should be backing up your departure. And if you see red on that screen, you know you're within 100 feet of that particular obstacle.
Mm-hmm. But the basic airmanship that goes before that, the technology should help you to avoid the terrain.
Right.
You shouldn't rely on the technology to get you out of a bad decision.
Oh, no, it should be
and I think in this case, you make your plan, and then you use the GPS to back up the plan. And GPS has failed. You know, in our situation here, we've got a basic Cessna 182 with who knows what kind of avionics. Maybe they've got a 396 or 496 on the yoke or something, but they didn't plug it in last night and the battery's dead. So now do you wait around to charge the battery on a 496? Nah, you take off. So you can't always rely on that.
Of course you can't, but if it's available, use it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. That should be secondary, not primary.
It's, you know, we have to just step back for a second. And, you know, we know for a fact that accidents don't happen when one thing goes wrong. They don't happen when two things go wrong. It takes a series of events that takes us to the accident site. And in this case here, this is the classic. I mean, you know, how many different ways, simple ways, might have been used to eliminate this accident and kept these two guys alive? We've identified some of them.
The phraseology.
Phraseology, simple, standard phraseology, fundamental to every pilot from their first flight.
Inadequate takeoff briefing.
You know, once again, just the most simple analysis of what we're going to do. Should we do it on every takeoff? Every takeoff, something could go wrong. Right. So by having that briefing, it alerts us to that, it prepares us for it, and puts us in a proactive mode. In this case here, just by asking how you're going to get back into the airport, would have said, oh, wait a minute, I can't go this way, I can't go that way. Why can't I go this way and that way? Because there's hills out there. I mean, that should have been foremost in their mind, and for whatever reason, it wasn't. Non-radar environment, does that create some different challenges for us? And how often does it happen nowadays?
Not very often.
And so what do we do differently?
Well, it happens for a reason. Because of terrain, of radar limitations. Yeah. We have radar to the ground at airports that are flat. Okay, we don't have radar to the ground at airports that are in the hills.
I mean, we talk about this bells and whistles, you know. I mean, there are things that should alert us to the fact that, you know, this ain't right, this ain't pure. Okay, why is there a non-radar environment? Why isn't there, you know, somebody watching us here?
Why is it a VFR airport?
Yeah, exactly. Why is there no instrument approach? Because the FAA could not figure out a way to safely get you down through the clouds into this rock-filled sky. You know, there's no way they could make an approach gradient that would clear all the terrain. That alone should have said something.
Simply recognizing it's a night departure just adds an element of risk, I think.
And once again, it just eliminates that feedback. And so much of flying, our action is predicated upon the visual feedback we get. And in this case here, early morning, dark departure, there they were. I mean, they were a projectile, and that's exactly what they were when they went into the side of the hill. They were doing nothing to prevent it because they were not getting any kind of feedback. So delaying. We pilots are, you know, very much in the go, go, go mode, whether it be a meeting, whether it be going home, get there. You know, we can go accident after accident predicated upon somebody absolutely had to be there, and by golly, they didn't get there, did they?
Bob, you know, the feedback is important, but to have the feedback, you need a context to reference what's happening against. They didn't build any context in terms of where the hills were, what the terrain was. So 2,200 to them sounded as good as 4,200 or 5,000. They had no understanding. They had no reference to apply that against.
When I hear about pilots doing something that just defies logic, and this is the case with this accident here, you know, the subject of fatigue comes in. But by golly, we as pilots almost definitionally have to fly sometimes when we're fatigued. But by golly, we do control many of our takeoff times. And I mean, how many of us take off late in the day after a full day of work, you know, when we're exhausted? Or in this case here, the opposite end of the extreme, too darn early in the morning where, you know, we're not awake yet. We haven't had any food in our bodies.
They're
our
not
bodies
up to speed.
Our bodies are a machine. They, you know, they need input to keep going. And these guys were just not ready to operate and to function. I mean, is flying an airplane easy? No, it requires our full capabilities. And instead of having one guy screw up, two guys were equally complicit in this thing to make an error this grievous.
You know, you talked about the complacency too, and I think something that a high-time experienced crew who operates a lot of IFR under a fairly structured environment, these guys are used to ATC leading them by the hand. They go in and out of high-density airports all the time. They're always on an IFR flight plan. ATC gives them a clearance. Well, it must be okay because ATC wouldn't lead us astray. There's no reason to double-check the information that we've received. They put a lot of faith and trust in that because they wouldn't give us a bad clearance. And they didn't get a bad clearance, they just executed improperly. But the same principle holds true. Just because ATC gives you something doesn't mean that you shouldn't double check it and make sure that it's reasonable, logical, it's going to work for you.
That ATC clearance in this case does not imply terrain clearance.
Exactly.
You are responsible for that
right.
as the pilot.
They were cleared as filed. But however you get to that first fix is up to you.
That's exactly
first
right.
First have to recognize that you're in a non-radar environment, and
yep.
we don't really know if that realization took place in this cockpit. You probably know, not.
Yeah.
Again, context. They didn't know whether they had radar or non-radar.
They did recognize at some point that they needed higher because they asked for higher.
Well, that may have been simply to get up there to altitude and get moving.
Yeah.
You know, get above 10,000.
Yeah, but they also came back and said we're at 2,200. And again, another bell that should have gone off. Why are we at 2,200?
And I guess just by way of summing this up, you know, if you do nothing else right, the key term is, you know, situational awareness. Just keeping track of the big picture. I mean, what are we doing? Why are we doing it? How are we doing it? By keeping track of where you are, where you're going, and what around you might be a problem, you know, just absolutely would have prevented this scenario.
And backing up and assessing your risk. All the things we've listed are risk issues, you know, mm-hmm. night, complacency, dark, fatigue, non-radar, all of those things. And when you start adding those up, you say, this could be a very dangerous departure.
And easily fixed with a little bit of thought.